This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I got news for you. I got some news for you.
All right.
Based on our visit with Alec Lindstrom this morning, where you invited Alec Lindstrom and the Lindstroms to the house for grilling in Charlotte,
yep.
Charcoal and the whole bit,
yep.
You walked yourself out over your skis on this one.
No,
just
I did
so
not.
You know. I want you to know,
I assure you,
you might have bitten off a little more than you could chew.
I don't even know what all you're right. going to tell me, and I know
Tom Luganville's, by the way. Tom Luganville's waiting in the wings. He'll want to hear this, right? So this morning, Lugs, on this show, we had Alec Lindstrom, and he's, you know, dabbles in the cooking and the grilling things, got a YouTube channel and a podcast. So, you know, he's cooking on a gas grill. Pack says, no, charcoal. Come on to Charlotte. Just bring you and your brother and your family, and, you know, we'll do it up right, you know, when we get some time, when we get back
have
to
some
you know, regular life
too.
Type deal, right? Yeah, if he's lucky, French onion soup. All right, it's enough out of you. All right.
That was beautiful.
So, wait a second. Stop. I'm going to finish this. So, just a moment ago, Mrs. Lindstrom, Alec and Chris Lindstrom's mom, has tweeted us and says, you may want to rethink inviting the whole family for barbecue. There are eight of us, and all of us have appetites like Alec.
Let's go for it. Let's go.
Great. I mean, soup and SpaghettiOs isn't that filling, Wes. You know that.
Yeah. Hey, this
is your last meal.
No. Pack promise grilling.
I'm grilling.
Pack promise steaks.
I love to grill. We're putting up the charcoal. We'll get some steak. We'll get something with a bone in it, and we're throwing it on the grill. I mean, we're not
we'll
going to go
Wagyu long bone.
Whatever it takes. You know what? I'm all for it because we're not going to go Tiger Woods and sushi in West Durham with his French onion soup. Right. No, we're going to go eat, man. Come on. Put some meat on the grill, real charcoal, get the fire, and let's do it. So the more the merrier.
And we're going to need a bank sponsor to finance.
No.
I can already tell you what Pac's going to do. He's going to know in advance what's going to happen. He's going to do a couple of pork butts because that'll feed a lot of people. So he'll do that. Then he'll throw some chicken breasts on there. All right. Maybe some fillets, maybe some ribeyes. And he'll have a smorgasbord
meat.
To feed a wealth of people.
Right. You got it. Lugs has got it figured out. Lugs is spot on, boys. That's how you
like
do it.
Low country boil type guy.
No.
Low country boil packer. Is that what we're gonna get?
No. Did you hear any low country boil in that conversation? You heard something with a bone in it. Now, last time you ordered your low country boil, how many times did you see a bone in it? You didn't.
That's right. Wes just better hope that the Lindstroms don't come to his house.
Let them come. I got grills. Let it rip. I love it.
It's going to be Campbell's chicken noodle soup and potato toast.
Right. Chicken stick for the road.
I got your chicken sticks. I got your chicken stick, Luke.
Man, y'all don't know what y'all are doing. Let me handle the food.
All right. Okay. Hey,
French onions.
There we go.
Sushi. Come on with that nonsense, please.
I mean, that's the Green Mile, man. Right. You're Tiger Woods.
Right. So weak. That is beyond weak. I'll have sushi. Are we out of kale? Please, man.
Put some on
the grill. Let's go. Smoke this thing up and let's get it cranked up. All right, let's talk football. Football. How about Ian Book at Notre Dame? Luke, let's just start right from the biggest storyline of the weekend. Notre Dame had to win, pressure on them to kind of showcase that, hey, we belong. And, boy, what an effort. Again, Clemson helped them a little bit. You've always said that. But you know what? Notre Dame won the game.
Won the game, deserved to win the game. And I think even more importantly, and, you know, we've talked before about this in our debate over where is Notre Dame in the hierarchy, especially at quarterback. And I always said, I question whether they have a quarterback that you win with or because of. And on Saturday night, they won because of the quarterback. He made the critical plays that you have to make at the critical times. That was the number one takeaway I had. My second takeaway is this is the first time we have seen a Notre Dame team be involved with a matchup against a team that you would argue has better overall personnel and is certainly better in the trenches. And Notre Dame won the battle up front, I think, on both sides of the ball. It was really, really impressive.
Luges, you mentioned their defense. We talk about Hamilton. We talk about Owusu-Koramoah. I mean, they've got some guys, right?
Sure.
The other thing is Clemson was missing some guys on defense.
Yeah.
I'm of the belief, though, if Clemson's healthy on defense, if Lawrence is in the lineup, look, I think the Tigers have a chance to win the game. But if they play 10 times, it's one of those 6-4 games, 6-4 series. It's not a 8-2-7-3 deal with these two teams, I don't think, is it? If Clemson's at full speed and Notre Dame's at full speed, it's maybe 6 out of 10 Clemson wins. It's not 8 out of 10.
No, I don't think it's 8, but I think it's maybe somewhere in between. I think it would be closer to 7. And here's the thing that we've got to acknowledge with the outcome of this game. Nobody missed or made a college football playoff berth with the outcome of that game. That's the one thing we got to step back and acknowledge. It was a tremendous stepping stone, a great hurdle for Brian Kelly's program. Listen, going into this that game, what were they, 29-3 in their last 32 games?
Yep.
All right? But the problem is, look at who the three losses were to and who the teams were and the personnel they had. That's the biggest hurdle, in my opinion, that they got over this past weekend, was to say just to yourselves, we can play with anybody in America. Now, do we need to play outstanding? Absolutely. Did Clemson help them a little bit, particularly in the first half? Yes, they did. But even if they had Trevor Lawrence, I'm of the belief that maybe the defensive guys that were missing maybe on this particular night would have had more of an impact, because could you have asked Trevor Lawrence to have a better statistical day than DJ did? I mean, DJ did every single thing you could ask a quarterback in that environment to do to give his team a chance to win. So maybe the defensive side would have been a little bit more help to get that personnel back for Clemson.
A couple things here. Number one, it doesn't matter if you think it's 6 of 10, 7 of 10. Hey, the object's to be 1-0, right? You don't have to play these guys 10 times. You play them once, and maybe we get that game again. Who knows? It'll play itself out one way or the other to December 19th. But you mentioned DJ's effort, Tom. I thought he'd be good, but that was crazy good. And, you know, as I was watching that game, and Notre Dame did a great job, on like you said, in the trenches on both sides. Mm-hmm. But I kept thinking to myself, my God, this kid's starting only his second game, and Notre Dame has circled the calendar, and they're playing lights out. What is that guy going to look like 2 years from now? I mean, it doesn't even seem fair, to be honest with you.
Well, Pac, did you notice how different the approach was, too? They went into the Boston College game extremely conservative, looking to protect him, wanting to limit himself from himself so that, you know, you don't feel like you got to make the big play all the time and things of that nature. They came into this game, and it doesn't matter what area of the field that we're in. It doesn't matter what the down and distance is. If we got to attempt an 18-yard comeback or a deep post over the middle or a 20-yard dig, we're going to turn him loose and let him go. And he responded. I think the thing that I've been most impressed with, and, you know, looking at that class coming out last year, you had Bryce Young and you had DJ, and those were kind of the two premier guys. Bryce, of course, went to Alabama. But in high school, DJ, as physically gifted as he was, he also would spray the ball around a little bit, and he wasn't always innately accurate. And then when you saw him early in the season get to play, he kind of did the same thing. And now he's settled in. I think he's obviously each and every day and each and every rep, he's getting more and more comfortable within the scheme. But as a freshman, as a young player, this is, I think, the most important thing. He has done a wonderful job of realizing that the personnel around him is going to be why he's successful. He doesn't have to influence them. He has to get the ball to them. Just play within yourself, make the plays that are there to be made, and let those guys do the rest of the work. He's really done a good job, and that's hard for young quarterbacks to do.
You know, the other thing that's scary, and this will be my last comment on it, I heard Dabo Swinney say on his coach's show, he said, well, we really couldn't run him because he's banged up. His shoulder's still messed up, and they didn't want to put him in a position, especially in a game as physical as that was, where one hit and he's out of the game, and you're thinking to yourself, holy mackerel, so he still threw for 4,000 yards and no picks, and they couldn't run him because of the shoulder? I mean, It's scary, his upside. But, again, you know, Clemson didn't lose that game because of their quarterbacks not being there. They lost the game because Notre Dame was better in the trenches and took advantage of the missing pieces, if you will, of Clemson's defensive side. So they got to get healthy. But Notre Dame, what an incredible win. Unbelievable.
Yeah, no question in my mind. And I think what makes this thing so fun, if we're fast forecasting forward and we do get a rematch of that game, and let's just say you've got an undefeated Ohio State out there in the rematch of that game, Clemson happens to win it. So now you have two one-loss teams in the ACC. Florida goes to the SEC championship. They lose to Alabama. Alabama's undefeated, but Texas A&M finishes with one loss. There are going to be so many awesome scenarios that get played out here for the college football playoff, given what we still don't know yet about the Big Ten, what we still don't know yet about the Pac-12, and what's occurring between the ACC and the SEC. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Hey, Lukes, De'Aaron King accounted for 87% of Miami's total offense on Friday night in Raleigh.
Yeah.
Is that good?
You know, I've heard that if you're in that range, you're probably going to win the game. I don't know if you consistently say that week in and week out. All joking aside, I got to be honest with you. I would have done the exact same thing that NC State did. Going into that game, I would have said, the only way we are going to lose this game is if De'Aaron King can prove that he can throw the ball to beat us. We are not going to let them run the ball to beat us. They're going to have to throw it. I would have done the exact same thing. And to De'Aaron King's credit, I mean, that throw right there we're showing was as good a throw as you will find anywhere on Saturdays or Sundays. I was really impressed with his ability when they made a decision, NC State on defense, to take the approach that they were going to take. Clearly, De'Aaron King realized this game is going to be won or lost on my shoulders because we're going to have to throw it. And the explosives that they created in the passing game were outstanding. I've been so impressed with, and I was hard on Miami the first few weeks based off of recent history. I think there was a lot of data points there that would verify that. But they've overcome a lot in terms of the psyche of their football team and the ability to prepare for teams, come off of bye weeks now, and then they play well. And to me, that's impressive. I think it shows a sign of maturity and a team that is focused on trying to get themselves to the ACC championship game.
And we will find out a lot more this weekend as they go to Blacksburg as an underdog, according to the smart folks in Vegas, against a Virginia Tech team coming off a gut-wrenching loss to Liberty. Oh. And Hendon Hooker doing his thing, too. So, again, that'll be a really entertaining game. Last hour, we touched base with Kenny Pickett. And he's back now. And it's really, number one, great to see him back playing again. And he does change Pitt's offense. Let's be honest. They've had a tough time running it, but he's really had a terrific year. But I was really happy to see him back, and good for him.
I was happy to see him back, and I was happy to see the team and their response, their execution, their ability to look like they could function, because you could tell that the confidence level that had been lacking the last few weeks was back. And hey, listen, when you have a defensive performance where you record 7 sacks and you create 3 turnovers, essentially Kenny Pickett and the Pitt offense just had to take what was in front of them and be able to capitalize on it. So a huge rebound win for Pat Narduzzi and his team.
All right, so if you take Pittsburgh, you count them as a team maybe back on the move, going north. Boston College loses to Clemson. They don't let it beat them twice. They get the win at Syracuse. Might not have been their best-looking ball game. Nonetheless, the Eagles win. And now all of a sudden, they get a chance to write history again. Here comes Notre Dame and Phil Jurkovec. You talk about Miami kind of settling in and finding a groove.
Yeah.
Where's Boston College now? You've played Clemson, and here comes Notre Dame.
So a couple of things that I think are interesting. You know, Boston College as a program is 2-32 versus top 5 teams. Guess who the 2 wins are against?
Wake up the echo.
Notre Dame.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And so I think two things. Number one, if you're Boston College, you got everything to gain, nothing to lose, right? Go out there and let it all hang out. And are you going to have to play out of your mind the way that Boston College did against Clemson in that first half? Absolutely going to. But your hope is that Notre Dame's drunk off the Clemson win and it lingers. And And if that happens and Notre Dame lets Boston College hang around, then we're going to have a heck of a football game going into the third and fourth quarter. So now that maturity I talked about with Miami, now we're going to see how that manifests itself with Notre Dame, a lot of veterans, a veteran quarterback, with one of the most exciting weekends in their recent, at least 20, 25-year history at Notre Dame. How do their kids respond by getting back to work, getting refocused on the next opponent, and an opponent in Boston College with a quarterback that they're certainly going to have a pretty good idea of how to defend in terms of what they believe his deficiencies were, what his strengths are. I mean, there's a reason he could not beat out Ian Book. There's a reason he did not play there. Why? Okay, well, the answer to that question is how Notre Dame will choose to defend Boston College.
Javon McKinley was on with us yesterday, Tom, and we talked about that senior leadership in the locker room. And you could tell in his answers, he was a really impressive guy to talk to, but you could just tell with his answer how much that means to them. They have really taken ownership. And you know, maybe this is one of those special times for Notre Dame football. They've been consistently good here the last 3 years. This being the fourth, where they're, hey, maybe they are a special team. But you got a sense with McKinley yesterday that, hey, that locker room understands what is at stake now, given what they accomplished on Saturday.
Well, Pac, think about all of those big, high-profile games, and some of them I referenced earlier where, you know, they'd won a lot of games, but they hadn't had that high-profile win against a team that maybe was athletically superior, or maybe it was a team that was just flat better than they were on both sides of the ball up front, which has been the case before. And those kids have been through that. They've been through that disappointment of saying, guys, how do we click the right buttons and finally get past this? And now they have. And when you have senior leadership, you have fourth and fifth year seniors, which can be a bit of a rarity at the Power Five level nowadays, they probably appreciate it a little bit more because they've been on the other side of it several times. And now they've tasted this side of it and certainly don't want to go back the other direction.
Lugs, maybe teams that are on the other side and kind of having really to self-check. Florida State didn't look great after an early flurry against Pittsburgh. Now go to Raleigh to meet NC State. Mike Norvell has not talked to the media since their two deep came out earlier this week that does not list Marvin Wilson on it. Tamari and Terry came back, left the game injured the other day. I'm kind of at a little bit at I'm my curiosity is starting to get piqued a little bit as to what's getting ready to happen here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, and we've talked about their roster, their locker room the entire year. And listen, I think the simple answer is Mike Norvell and the staff are just trying to gut through it, get to the end, get to the finish line, whether Marvin Wilson is a COVID issue or an opt-out issue. We're going to find out soon enough. Terry, where is he at in terms of health? To me, they're just trying to find a way to get through games and somehow improve in some area each and every week to have something to point to for the future that could be a building block. And it's just, I wouldn't want to be in this position right now because I know there's just a lot of negativity swirling around the program, and that's not a fun place to be.
Yeah, no, good points. Appreciate your time as always. I'll make sure you get a complimentary bowl of French onion soup next time I see you.
I appreciate it. I'm actually going to go run and heat up some SpaghettiOs real quick. So you guys have a good rest of your show.
That's terrible. It's just awful. Appreciate that.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
We do appreciate Tom Luganville stop by, Kenny Pickett, Alec Lindstrom, and the entire Lindstrom family, which eventually will make it over here to the home, and we will grill out, eat like kings and queens. That's what we'll do. That's what we'll do. I guarantee it.
And put it on the YouTube channel.
That's it.
Put it on the YouTube channel.
We are about 5 minutes away from the official unveiling of the ACC women's basketball schedule. So just give you a heads up on all that good stuff. And, you know, Wes, as I'm preparing for the radio show yesterday, I turned the television on, and, man, we had soccer all over the joint on ACC Network. And we have bragged endlessly since starting this venture how great soccer is in this league, both the men and the women. There's no league in the country even remotely close to the quality of depth and players and coaches and history and the whole routine. And this tournament going on in Cary now, man, the fact that we had teams eliminated yesterday that you could find ranked with a number beside their name, and I'm not talking about where you're seated in the league, I'm talking about nationally, just goes to show you
right.
the depth. But it's going to be a sensational conclusion as we roll into the semis today.
Yeah, I agree with you. Interesting, Mark Kerkorian in Florida State picking up a 2-0 win on Notre Dame. North Carolina scored early, by the way, in their match against Virginia Tech and made it hold up in beating the Hokies 1-0. Virginia was a winner. Duke was a winner yesterday. Semifinals, by the way, are on Friday, so we'll talk about that more on tomorrow's show. But you're right, Pack. Every one of these, I mean, look at it. I mean, 2-0 and 4-1, that was the deep end of the pool, if you will. The rest of these games were just, you know, tight fits all the way. I mean, when 1-0 is – and you get that goal early like Carolina did, holy smokes. And you see FSU, Duke, Carolina, Virginia will be the semifinals on Friday, also here on ACC Network. So
and
excited
Diana,
to have that for you coming up Friday afternoon.
And Diana Ordonez has the hat trick for the Hoos. So a lot happening, man. I'm telling you what, and I said this before it got started, don't know who's going to win, but if we get chalk, now granted we didn't have chalk yesterday because you had some seeds that were favored that did not win, but if we get chalk in the finals and you have the one seed against the two seed, that's Florida State, North Carolina. They were both undefeated in the regular season. They did not see each other. So that's what it turns out to be. Grab your popcorn. But whatever the combination is, the teams in this league are just so good. And the men get cranked up for their tournament beginning this weekend. So stay tuned.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham, ACC Network. All right, Wes, the conference is bestowed upon us again another very important measure here. We are going to unveil exclusively the 20-21 ACC Women's Conference basketball schedules, all right? But before we do all that, just a reminder that the AP poll came out, preseason poll. The conference had a number of teams ranked, no surprise. Louisville sitting there at number 5. NC State was at number 8. Irish at 22. Cuse at 23. Three of those four teams received first place votes, according to the Blue Ribbon panel that covers the Atlantic Coast Conference. So you kind of know what we expect in terms of the upper third of the conference, all right? So anything surprise you there? You thought there would be more teams, less teams? What was your take on that?
No, that kind of is, and again, I'll go back a little bit to what we said on the men's side. That's kind of the standards right now, right? Syracuse had a little bit of a flurry during the course of the year, got some nice wins, but a younger team that's gotten older. Coach Hilsman does a fabulous job.
Tiana's
Notre
back.
Dame, we know Neil Ivey comes back and inherits, or Neil Ivey comes back as head coach and inherits a very young team now with a lot of experience. Remember, Notre Dame had lost all those players from the year before. NC State and Louisville, enough said. Two of the best teams, not only in the ACC, but in all of women's college basketball. The one thing you will notice as we dive into these conference schedules, and I want to point this out because it bears, as you see the slates unfold here, I call your attention to the first week because just about every school in ACC women's basketball, when the conference schedule starts in early December, is going to play three games, Mark, three, in a 7 or 8 day period in early December. So keep that in mind and look and see who maybe your favorite team plays or a matchup that gets staged early in the season. You're like, aha, here's a measuring stick. So let's get to the schedule, shall we? And we're going to start with Louisville, Jeff Walz' team, and they're going to open the schedule on December 10th. Talk about your marquee conference games. Carol Lawson's ACC debut, she will host Louisville at Cameron. And look at Jeff Walz's first three games, Mark, at Duke, North Carolina home, and Florida State, and then with 10 days plays Katie Meyer in Miami. How about that little run to start the year in a 10-day period?
Apparently they love going to Durham, just by the looks of things there. Don't see that very often.
I see that, yes. Yeah. So I'm not sure exactly. That might be just a tactical error. We'll double check that. All right. Here's the back half of what Louisville has in the conference, and you're going to notice three of their last four are on the road, at Syracuse, at Pitt, at Notre Dame. And, of course, a home game with Clemson for the Louisville Cardinals. Okay. NC State. Wes Moore brings back the tournament champions from a year ago. They start at BC and then home with Wake Forest and Duke, and before they go to Georgia Tech on New Year's Eve on the 31st. And you will see that four of their last six in the conference come in a period of four of their last six are at home, and they're also going to play North Carolina twice in a 14-day period.
And a road trip to Louisville.
Might be a bit unique.
Yep, a road trip to Louisville, which will be one you should circle the date in January. That'll be a good one.
Ah, by the way, Pack, quick note here. The double Duke, I'm being told, by Louisville is accurate.
Right. I said, Jeff Lawless likes to go
to
Durham.
It happens three times.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there we go. Let's go to Syracuse, Quentin Hillsman's team. Pick third, two times with Louisville in the span of 13 days. Their first three games out of the chute are on the road at Miami, at North Carolina, at Boston College for the Orange. You see North Carolina on New Year's Eve. And then when we get to the second page, you'll see the swing with Louisville. February 1st, February 14th. Those are showdown games in this league.
No question.
Notre Dame is next. Neil Ivey comes back, and she will start her Notre Dame career in the ACC at home against Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech, and then travel to Clemson on the 20th.
How about five straight on the road? How about that one? At Clemson, at Miami, at Georgia Tech, at BC, at Syracuse. We're packing for a couple weeks.
Yeah. Well, and then what happens on the backside? You get the payback. Four of your last six are at home, including Syracuse, Florida State, and the finale with Louisville. And you see Louisville twice in a span of 3 weeks as well. All right, let's go to North Carolina. Courtney Banghart and the Tar Heels, who opened the season in Winston-Salem at Wake Forest. 3 days later at Louisville, and then we'll host Syracuse on December the 17th. You see the span of four of six on the road from December 31st to January 21st, and then you flip the calendar, and you see the February slate for the Tar Heels, and five of the last eight are at home for North Carolina. So look there at the Tar Heels schedule. Florida State is next. Brooke Wyckoff, of course, is handling the duties this year for Sue Semeraus' program. Five of their first seven are at home. You see Virginia, Louisville, Pittsburgh, Clemson, all before the calendar turns. And they also get two times with Louisville, December 17th, January 10th. You flip to the back half of the schedule, and you see that Florida State finishes up with three of the last five at home, but a kind of a traveling month on the back end of February for Florida State. Virginia Tech is next. Kenny Brooks' team will open the season. They'll have Pittsburgh at Notre Dame and Virginia in a 10-day span starting on the 10th. And then, Mark, they've got a break from conference play from December 20th to January 3rd. Before they turn the calendar. And you see road trips to Georgia Tech and North Carolina, and then on the back end, four of the last six are on the road. Only home games Duke and Syracuse. Right there, kind of toward the backside of February. Boston College is next. Joanne Burnaby McNamee is the coach of the Eagles, did a phenomenal job last year, ACC Coach of the Year. She'll start at Georgia Tech on December 9th, NC State at home and Syracuse at home. And you see road trips in 3 days at Louisville and at Notre Dame in mid-January for the Eagles. And then four of the last six on the road for Boston College as well, as we flip the calendar into the month of February. And you see the road trips to Virginia, North Carolina, Wake Forest, and Syracuse for the Eagles of Boston College. Nell Fortner's second year at Georgia Tech starts with a home game against Boston College, a road game at Notre Dame, and a home game against Miami December 9th through the 17th. And then you see Notre Dame, Clemson. Go ahead, Pac.
I was going to say, enjoy your stay in South Bend. You check in on December 13th. You want to keep the same rooms. We'll keep them there till January 3rd for Georgia Tech. Same rooms for Coach Fortner.
Yep. There you go. And three of the last five are on the road in that span. And on the backside, you'll see that of those three of the last five, you're tangling with Louisville and Florida State in a seven-day span. Next on the list, Duke. Carol Lawson's team, we already mentioned, opens the campaign in the ACC hosting Louisville. Then twice. They're at Miami and at NC State.
Man, host Louisville twice, Wes.
Yeah, December 10th, December 31st, right?
Yep.
And then four of the last six are at home for Duke. So the way you see the back end of the schedule for Carol Lawson in her first season in Durham as their head coach, Virginia, North Carolina, Miami, Pittsburgh, sandwiched around trips to Virginia Tech and Wake Forest. Anxious to see that team, kind of see how that team responds to her first year on campus. Miami is next. Katie Meyer has always been a favorite of ours on this show. They play three games in 7 days to start the season, if you will. Syracuse, Duke, and at Georgia Tech on the 17th, then throw in Louisville for good measure on the 20th. How about those four in 10 days, Pac?
That's pretty tough. A lot of numbers early, right? You see Notre Dame, Louisville, Syracuse. You're going to handle exactly where you stand early if you're Miami.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you turn the calendar, and on the backside of this, you see the you kind of see the NC State Duke trip over in early February, February 14th at Florida State, and then home for Virginia and Wake Forest before the finale at Clemson. Four left here. Wake Forest is next on our list. They open with UNC at NC State and at Carolina in 10 days, Pac. Whoa.
How strange is that? Could we not have just done like a doubleheader December 10th and just said, hey, we'll see you guys in like 10 days while you're here. Why don't we just go ahead and play two? Kind of crazy schedule there, isn't it?
I don't know. I'll have to check the logistics on that. And then on the backside, you'll see that Wake Forest also has about three of their last five on the road at Clemson, at Miami, and at Florida State after home games with Boston College and Duke. Following Wake Forest, Amanda Butler and Clemson, who get four of their first five on the road at Virginia, at Pittsburgh, Notre Dame at home, and at Florida State in a three-week period.
Tigers
early road action.
The Tigers are really going to enjoy their stay at Pittsburgh both times. It's a beautiful time of the year, Pittsburgh. Middle of December, middle of January. Back-to-back road trips for the Tigers.
Yeah. And then you flip the card to the back end, and you see some home games, as you would expect. Four of the last five at home. The only trip, though, to number five Louisville in the last week in February. So that's a look at Clemson's conference calendar. Virginia is next. Cavaliers are going to open with a home game against Clemson and then road games at Florida State and Virginia Tech. And then you see the way 2021 starts off with Louisville, Syracuse, and NC State right off the bump. And you see that Wake Forest, that game will be determined by UVA's return to play policies, and then the back end of the schedule for the last six are on the road, at Notre Dame, at North Carolina, Miami, and Duke, with a home game with NC State, and, of course, finale with Virginia Tech. Lance White in Pittsburgh is the last school to profile their schedule for ACC play. You see they open at Virginia Tech, Clemson at Florida State. You see the double homes with Clemson, December 13th, January 10th. And then four of the last six will be on the road for the Panthers, who upset Notre Dame in the opening game of the ACC tournament a year ago. You see at Wake, at Duke, Louisville, Notre Dame at home with at NC State and at Georgia Tech to close the campaign. So there you have the ACC women's basketball schedule.
You covered it all, West Durham. Every single conference game, you covered it all. I'm excited, though, for hoops to get started. I know we have football in the brain, and rightfully so, because it's going to be awesome coming down the stretch drive. But I am really fascinated to see how college basketball, men and women, can kind of get this thing upright and moving forward. It is going to be a fascinating journey this year in college hoops, no question.
Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham, final segment of a Wednesday show. Again, happy Veterans Day. Again, salute to the veterans, the best in the world. That's why we are in the greatest country in the world. But real quick, before we get to our items, before we say adios, I know there's some folks after we went through that schedule that said, well, why in the world would teams go back? Why is Louisville going to Duke twice? Why is Clemson going to Pitt twice? There is a reason behind all that, Wes. There's a reasoning behind all that.
Yeah, as we understand now in getting some information, two conference games were added this year to get them to 20 rather than the 18 they previously had. And they've got a subcommittee, John Wildhack, put together that was set up to work for some, quote, COVID adjustments. And, again, the logistics on this and that type thing. So when you're adding games, they're still going to play 20 conference games, which is up from the 18. But they were also looking to do it in a way that fit conference games specifically due to COVID. There was some guidance on those schedules and things like that. So that's why you see the doubles. But then with the math pack, not everybody has like the double game at, Pittsburgh or the double game with Duke or Louisville, whatever the case may be. So that's some of the intel that we're getting shared with, and we wanted to try and clarify that as much as possible, maybe a little bit more. Mary McElroy is the associate commissioner for women's basketball. We'll talk with her about it at some point, maybe down the road as the season gets cranked up. It's an interesting way to handle what we all know to be a very fluid thing. We've been talking about basketball schedules here for a long time, and I think the ACC, along with the other Power Fives, have tried to do their very best to maintain the balance of those schedules, Pack. But you and I have both talked off the air about smaller conferences in Division I basketball that are just going to split their schedules. If you play a team in a round-robin format, you're going to play them in consecutive days in some of these lower conferences. Yep. You're going to play the two games you're supposed to play against them, either at home or on the road, and you're going to play them in consecutive days. And that's going to be your conference schedule. Those are the safest ways that some Division I conferences are trying to do it. The ACC and some others trying to maintain at least some of that competitive balance the best they can. And I think that's important to point out as well.
That's what I was kidding around about. I think it was Wake Forest that's got North Carolina, two of their first three. And you're like, well, why don't we just knock this thing out? We're going to see them on December 10th, December 20th. Again, putting schedules together, even when we unveiled the football schedule, it's difficult. And then you throw a pandemic on top of it. I mean, it is a very hard thing to do. So tip of the cap to the ACC folks.
All right.
And, again, it's always a pleasure unveiling all this stuff so all the fans can understand, hey, we're playing so-and-so on this date and so forth. So looking forward to hoops getting cranked up here in a couple weeks. Should be fun.
Yep. I agree with you on that. Okay, a couple of notes here. I noticed that overnight, Sean Connery's original gun from the James Bond movies is up for sale. You're a big Sean Connery guy, right?
God rest his soul. Yep. Passed away at the age of 90. 200K could be yours.
Yeah.
200,000.
It's right in your wheelhouse, isn't it? That's right in your wheelhouse.
You know, I got to tell you, I love Bond. I loved Sean Connery. I loved him as 007. I love everything about 007 movies. But as far as a priority goes, I got to tell you, that's not high on the list. Got to tell you, for 200,000, there's other things I'd rather have. Because with the Lindstrom family coming to the house, I may have to invest in another Weber grill. And the boys are coming to eat some meat. Yeah. So I might need to, you know, earmark that money for a little cookout as opposed to the James Bond gun. Just telling you. Pretty cool, though.
All right.
God rest Sean. I can't believe he passed away. He's gone. Bummer.
I know. Yeah.
Loved him.
Sidebar, a couple of years ago, if you were listeners to the world-famous ACC Central show on Sirius XM 371, you know that Packard discovered that Kentucky Fried Chicken was selling something called a Yule log.
Yule log,
that you would light, and it was allegedly supposed to smell like a KFC chicken.
Fried chicken.
Allegedly, right?
No, no.
That was supposed to be the smell.
No, yeah. Allegedly. I have proof that it smelled like, because I had a guy in Alabama, because I said, I got to figure out a gift for Billy. And what do you get a guy like Billy Packer for Christmas? And I thought maybe a KFC Yule log. I mean, who gets one of those for Christmas? How about getting one for me? And I couldn't get my hands on them because they sold out so fast. And I had some dude in Alabama call me up on the radio and show and said, Pack, it's the best thing ever happened to you is not getting it. I said, why is that? He said, well, I had a buddy who got one and it caught on fire in the guy's house and they had to put it out. And the guy's house smelled like fried chicken for 3 months. And he says it was brutal. So he said, you don't want a KFC Yule log for Billy Packer.
That was going to be my Christmas present a couple of years ago to you. Yesterday, however, I found this year's gift for Mark Packer.
I want this.
Yes, folks, Bojangles.
I want this.
Fresh biscuit scent candles.
I want one of those. I want one of those, Wes. Forget Christmas. I want one today so I can light it right here on the set and have the entire basement smell like biscuits from Bojangles. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm going to get my hands on some of those. I know some folks at Bojangles. We have got to get our hands on those.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, Sirius XM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.